Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Welcome to November, and thanks for tuning in to our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, every quarter here in Connecticut, would you be surprised to know that local manufacturers with high-paying, high-benefit jobs are looking to fill 6,000 open positions? And all it takes to secure one of these stellar careers is getting the training. So we're going to dial up Max McIntyre, an aerospace industry employee and president of the Aerospace Components Manufacturers Group, to talk about these opportunities and the ACM's 2017 Future Workforce Opportunities Fair coming up this Wednesday in Hartford. Then we'll refocus on another workforce issue, sustainability. Our guests will invite you to join a robust discussion on how companies are becoming more successful and profitable by incorporating energy and environmental sustainability into their business plans. It's all happening at the upcoming CBIA Connecticut Sustainability Conference. Then we'll close inviting you to a night of edgy theater with the Backyard Theater Ensemble, a new nonprofit theater company drawing dozens of talented actors and technicians to produce and present award-winning stagecraft, including an upcoming reading of Catholic Schoolgirls by Casey Curdy, which is being presented at Hamden's Whitneyville Cultural Commons later this month. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Connecticut's Healthy Eyes Alliance and our radio stations are helping promote improving and maintaining your sight and the sight of those you love. By supporting the Alliance's campaign to save sight with a gift or donation, you can play a role in providing free vision screenings to almost 27,000 underserved preschool children and 2,600 adults in the tri-state area, and distributing more than 500 free vouchers to underserved clients for free eye exams and glasses. To help this organization continue its sight-saving vision, or to learn more about obtaining services, visit HealthyEyesAlliance.org. Well, when you pick up the phone with a guest and you essentially exchange about a half a dozen words with them and they say, send me workers now, it really speaks to the concern of our first guest this morning, Max McIntyre. He's Vice President of New England Operations for New England Airfoil Products of Farmington, but he's also the president of ACM, which is the Aerospace Component Manufacturers Group here in Connecticut. As they explained to me, companies like Sikorsky and Pratt & Whitney have orders for hundreds of helicopters and thousands of jet engines that will also increase the demand for parts and components made by the region's smaller and mid-sized manufacturers like New England Airfoil Products. And how are these industries going to get the workforce that they're going to depend on to build these engines and to keep Connecticut's economy pumping and to put fantastic salaries and benefits into the pockets of these individuals? Well, coming up this Wednesday, as we play this, there will be an Aerospace Components Manufacturers Future Workforce Opportunities Fair. It's happening from 8:30 to noon at the Connecticut Convention Center in Hartford. And we're here to talk to Max this morning, both from the perspective of a principal in an aerospace supplier, but also as the president of this group that's hosting this job fair. So, Max, great to meet you and to help partner with you on this effort. We hope we can not only generate a bunch of feet through the door of the conference this coming Wednesday, but also hopefully some worthy applicants to companies like yours.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you. It's great to be here. But right now, it's a great time to be entering the workforce, or it's a great time to be changing careers. And it's also a great opportunity for Connecticut, because this is a great time for aerospace, especially in Connecticut. ACM is a large aerospace cluster consisting of 116 component manufacturing organizations that are based right here in Connecticut and also in Southwest Mass. And our primary purpose is to share best practices. And we manufacture quite a bit of components that go into all these aircraft, along with any of the special processes, the special manufacturing process that these components need.
Mm. Well, as I kind of briefly talked with you before we turned on the microphone this morning, coming up next week on our program, we're going to be talking with Sacred Heart University, which just released a poll that indicated that about half of the 1,000 people that they queried said that they would consider leaving Connecticut in the next 5 years. And these folks represent medium to high earners here in Connecticut. And according to the information I'm getting from ACM, right now in Connecticut, as you said, send me workers, because every quarter, manufacturers of every size are hiring 6,000 people, and these are not frontline. These are not burger flipping jobs in terms of wage and benefit.
Right, and aerospace manufacturing grew up right here in Connecticut, and therefore it grew a highly skilled workforce over there. You've got 100 years of workforce development in Connecticut, and that's outstanding. But right now, we must continue this workforce development. And we need to capture the dreams of those seeking to get into a lifelong career in aerospace manufacturing. These are very well-paying careers, and the organizations that are in our group, they have great benefits.
Is ACM having any luck, either in concert with other organizations dealing with high-tech manufacturing or on its own, in getting its diplomats like you into even middle schools and high schools to try to inspire these potential workforce candidates?
Yes, we have four branches to our organization, ACM, and one of those is the Workforce Development Group. And they go into the local tech high schools and also to the local community colleges that have these manufacturing courses, either a one-year course or a two-year course. And all of our companies, individually and as a group, are involved in the colleges, seeking not only those that want to get into becoming machinists, but also your mechanical engineers and other types of engineers. Everybody's very active in the state, to include help from our government agencies in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very active.
And in terms of responsiveness, I mean, when I'm out there talking to high-tech manufacturers or even to the young people who are being courted or considering going into these career tracks, there is still a lot of trepidation and fear, and in some cases even confusion about how much these young people need to already be sort of inherently gifted as mathematicians and scientists and high-level technical thinkers. I mean, my understanding from people like you is that these are still skills that can be successfully taught to individuals at the high school and college level, even if they weren't math and science whizzes or have IQs of 150 or more.
That is also true. You know, the entire cluster is committed to long-term viability, is always leaning forward toward cutting-edge technology and great manufacturing practices, and we're innovation-driven. Now, on this side, I also want people to understand is that the schools nowadays, high schools, they do a great deal with the math. All the STEM programs that go on, they do a fantastic job. And kids actually, and young adults actually come out of schools, high schools, better prepared with those kinds of skills than I believe they were in the past. I can look back at my own education here in Connecticut compared to what my children, who have just recently graduated high school, have come into contact with. And that when they go out and go to enter the workforce and are looking for a career, a lot of these companies are willing to go ahead and assist them with tuition assistance, either with a free ride or with assistance along the way with a percentage of those costs to educate them. And also there's a lot of on-the-job training that takes place inside of the organization. As for the ACM, we offer in our workforce development, we do offer these courses that we do at local businesses, to where we have colleges teach courses such as shop math and GD&T and blueprint reading and safety. So we assist those that are looking to enter this career with these courses that would be best give them the best possible chance for success.
Well, let's talk about some of these some of the folks who have emerged from these programs who are now working at New England Airfoil Products.
Oh, I have several that are actually immersed from these courses, some from Asnuntuck, some from Naugatuck Valley Community College, and some from Goodwin College, who are doing fantastic. I even have several that are currently enrolled in these places as students, and working here full-time with full benefits, going to school, really enhances both their academic pursuits, and the academic pursuits enhance their job here.
Yeah,
at New England Airfoil.
That's a critically important point, because you know, we think of the potential disconnect between the academic world and the workforce world, but it sounds like both the ACM and other similar agencies and organizations around Connecticut and beyond are doing a really good job at making sure that the education and the work is almost happening simultaneously and complementing each other.
Yes, this is critical. This is critical, and I sometimes go to these courses and give them live feedback on the training that they're providing. You know, through seeing it on our shop floor, on our manufacturing facility floor, to help them enhance their programs. So it's a good working relationship. So these students come here, they work, they perform their duties. They actually even sometimes go back, and they're well ahead of what they're learning in the classroom at the time.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, for folks that may not be familiar specifically with New England Airfoil products, let's talk a little bit about what your company and similar companies do. You're one of literally 1,000 or more companies. I'm sorry, hundreds of manufacturers, I should say, right here in Connecticut, courting thousands of individuals with job openings right now. Tell us about some of these world-class companies that New England Airfoil Products supplies.
Oh, we're suppliers to the major OEMs that are in the turbine engine manufacturing, both in the aerospace and defense sectors, on the commercial military side. These engines also go into industrial gas turbines, and then engines that are used to pump oil and gas out of the ground. So you're looking at companies such as Pratt & Whitney, General Electric, Rolls-Royce, Honeywell, Siemens, Solar Turbines, and many others. That's just to name a few. But all of them require engines going into the future. Just on the commercial, large jet commercial engine side, there are approximately 24,000 engines on order to be manufactured over the next 10, 15 years. That's 24,000 engines, with a good portion of those components to be manufactured right here in Connecticut for our state OEM, Pratt & Whitney.
You know,
that's quite a bit of opportunity there.
So to that end, let's spend the last 4 or 5 minutes that we have with you, Max, talking about this upcoming event on Wednesday, November 8th, Workforce Opportunities Fair. Are these fairs things that the ACM helps organize or participates in regularly, or is this a sort of a first of its kind for you guys?
Oh, no. The ACM has been doing this for years. And a matter of fact, last year as we continue to grow as an organization, we stepped it up, and now we're having it in the Connecticut Convention Center. And we do this. This is our event. We host it. It'll be 100 Connecticut-based companies there this year. There'll also be the schools there, the colleges. Some government agencies will be there. And it's an opportunity for high schools and tech schools to bring their students in the morning to the workforce fair to walk around. The afternoon is reserved for customers and others interested in getting into aerospace. So I encourage everybody to go to our website. That's www.aerospacecomponents.org. And on that website, you're going to see a banner for the trade show. If you just click on that and register and let us know. And it'd be great to see everybody down there.
Excellent. Well, in the last couple minutes, I have to go back for folks that may have just tuned in at the beginning of the program to hear this segment and didn't get the full kind of force of the sentiment that we're trying to send out here. Every quarter in Connecticut, 6,000 jobs are waiting to be filled, and these are high-paying, great-benefit jobs, in most cases where some, if not all, of the educational component to learn how to do them is overlaid with on-site, hands-on work within the companies where these individuals choose to go. How many members of your workforce do you encounter who said, boy, if you had told me 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that I would have gone from high school into this level of work and benefit and compensation, I would have said, you're crazy. I'm not good at math. I'm not good at science. This whole STEM thing is lost on me.
Probably not too many would have said that. Well, I don't know if I said that right.
No.
Our workforce is very happy with what they're doing. They really, really love what they're doing. And we're not doing simple things. We're manufacturing airfoils. This is all five-axis machining to very, very, very tight tolerance on parts that aren't going into toys. These things are going into things that spin very fast at high temperatures and spin. And they've got to be right. So we ensure that our workforce is fully engaged, enjoying their job, understanding the importance of their job. I mean, even right now, when I talk about five-axis machining and trying to find five-axis machine operators as well as veteran machinists, they're getting far and few out there, far and few in between. And we are willing to go ahead and take people on and develop them into these positions, and we want to hire them for life. So these are careers we're offering here. These are careers.
Yeah. But the point I was
trying to cash generator for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but the point I was trying to make is that that a lot of times the young people that you're seeking to bring into the fold don't even realize that they have it within themselves to be able to do it. But through the kind of training and exposure that the Aerospace Component Manufacturers Group and even your company at New England Airfoil Products is making available to them, these individuals are enjoying this success, which is critically important. Folks can learn more about it this coming Wednesday, November 8th, from 8:30 to noon at the Connecticut Convention Center with the Aerospace Component Manufacturers Future Workforce Opportunities Fair. We hope folks will come out and learn more. As we heard from Max, there are these fairs that happen on a regular basis. So if you end up missing this one, there are certainly more ways to learn about future ones. Max, let's just have that website one more time, please.
That website is www.aerospacecomponents.org.
Thank you. Max McIntyre, he's president of the Aerospace Component Manufacturers Group here in Connecticut and vice president of New England Operations for New England Airfoil Products in Farmington. Max, great chatting with you. Learned a lot, and good luck with the fair and your work here in employing more of Connecticut's young people into these important fields. When we talk a lot about sustainability, both as individuals here, as a state, and we are here today with a couple of individuals, including Eric Brown, senior counsel at the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, who's going to help us kick off this segment, which is basically an overview and invitation to the Connecticut Sustainability Conference, which is coming up on Friday, November 17th at the Pratt & Whitney Hangar and Museum in East Hartford. And it's going to feature a robust discussion on how companies are becoming more successful and profitable by incorporating energy and environmental sustainability into their business plans. So, Eric, thank you for coming on the show and helping us kick off our discussion this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So give me the backstory on this. Tell us a little bit about why now, why this location, and a little bit about the conversations that went around CBIA as you were brainstorming the idea of bringing this type of an event to the public here in Connecticut.
Sure. Well, this event grows out of an event we did with Pratt & Whitney on Earth Day, for Earth Day in 2016, where they had asked us to partner up and help bring together their supply chain of manufacturers primarily, and get them the latest information on how they could be more efficient and more sustainable in their practices. And it turned out to be so popular that we decided we would try and put sort of a bigger program together, if you will, invite a broader scope of businesses to come and hear from actual businesses on what they're doing and to sort of receive some best practices and ideas that they could take back and put into place in their own facilities. So that's kind of what the philosophy was and how we designed it. And you know, as folks see the agenda, they'll see that there are quite a few businesses on there. They're going to talk about what their practices are in the areas of water, waste, and energy primarily, that's saving them money, but also, you know, improving their business model and improving the attractiveness of their business to young employees especially, and all the sort of ancillary benefits to improving sustainability.
So who is the ideal audience that you would like to pitch to come out to this for those who may not have heard about it yet or registered yet?
Sure. Well, certainly anybody in the manufacturing industry, anybody who works in a company or a service company that wants to know or needs to know what's going on in the world of sustainability, specifically in Connecticut. And this is a Connecticut-focused program, so the issues that we're touching on in terms of water, packaging, energy efficiency, all these things are very significant policy topics in the state. So people will be getting updated on what's going on from a policy perspective and trends in that area, as well as how companies are taking advantage of opportunities once they understand, you know, what the trends are in Connecticut. How can they take advantage and you know, improve their business practices and sustainability.
And we do hear a lot about, including with other guests from CBIA over the years, the growing concern of businesses, especially in manufacturing and in the STEM world, of a significant shortage or lack of people to be able to come and work and do the work that they do here in Connecticut. And you made an interesting mention a few moments ago about, you know, young people and getting them interested. Is it a fact that having a viable and overt sustainability initiative within a business provides an enticement to younger people, or provides an advantage in the area of recruiting or attracting individuals to come and work for a company?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a number of surveys, both in state and nationally, that shows that you know, younger workers, I don't want to just limit it to millennials, but, you know, younger workers coming out of college and or early in their career are definitely interested in working for companies that are conscious and concerned about how their activities interplay with, you know, the ecosystem. And it definitely is a selling point. We've seen from data that that's one of several benefits of pursuing these practices. So I don't think there's any question about that.
Well, that's great. We also, for years, have talked with guests on this program from a wide range of sources about sustainability and the push, even all the way down to small businesses and even home-based businesses, doing things like, you know, changing the kind of light bulbs that you use and putting, you know, automatic light switches in rooms and making mm-hmm. little tweaks to save a few dollars here and there. But I guess when you can maximize across an entire workforce and across an entire group of facilities, like some of Connecticut's largest manufacturers have, we're talking the potential for millions of dollars in savings every year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, even on the small side, the number, the dollar number of savings is obviously not going to be as big as a large manufacturer. But it's generally find it's a larger number than people expect it to be. Mm-hmm. So a lot of companies that'll start, you know, looking into this and taking steps to improve energy efficiency will be surprised at how much they can save by focusing in on that. And as I said, even for small businesses, so it only multiplies as you go up, the size of buildings and the amount of energy that a company is using, the amount of waste material that they generate. All of that stuff is really ripe for analysis and for for a company to evolve. There's no question about it. I still go and take tours of companies where, even at this point, something as simple as making sure that all the lighting on site is fluorescent, is not fluorescent, is LED lighting. Not only saves a ton of money, but it brightens the place up. Makes the workers more sort of, happier or more productive. So the sort of the list of benefits certainly includes and often starts with the bottom line, but companies find that they discover more and more ancillary benefits to these activities as they get further into it.
Very good. We are going to come back with Eric Brown, a senior counsel at CBIA, who is also going to be presenting opening remarks at the upcoming CBIA Connecticut Sustainability Conference. It's coming up on Friday, November 17th, beginning at 8:30 in the morning, going into the noon hour at the Pratt & Whitney Hangar and Museum in East Hartford. There'll be talks on water, essential in Connecticut, waste and packaging in Connecticut, and then a talk entitled Energy 3.0, New Trends and Opportunities, that'll cover the different energy sources available to manufacturing and other industries. We'll come back with Eric Brown after we speak with one of the other presenters who's going to be at the conference. That is Jeff Ulrich of the Aquarian Water Company. So we're going to actually take a break, come back with Jeff and Eric in just a minute. So stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help many causes that are supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. You know, with the busy holiday season approaching, the American Red Cross is encouraging donors to give blood now to help ensure a sufficient supply for patients this winter. Between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day, many regular donors delay giving due to holiday activities and travel. This often decreases the amount of donated blood available for patients. So give patients in need another reason to be thankful this holiday season. Make an appointment to give blood. Download the free Red Cross Blood Donor app or visit redcrossblood.org or call 800-RED-CROSS, that's 800-733-2767, to find out how you can help. All right. Thanks for sticking with us. So we hope that we've got some business folks and business leaders out there, business owners, interested in coming out to the Connecticut Sustainability Conference presented by the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, CBIA. It's coming up on Friday, November 17th, beginning at 8:30 and going into the noon hour at the Pratt & Whitney Hangar and Museum on Airport Avenue in East Hartford. Aside from our first guest this morning, who we are speaking with, Eric Brown at CBIA, who will be offering opening remarks, our guest for this segment of the program is going to be part of a presentation entitled Water Essential in Connecticut. It's Jeff Ulrich. We were calling him Ulrich by accident. Jeff Ulrich, Director of Supply Operations at Aquarion. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
And apologies for the name snafu. We talk a lot about water and its protection and preservation on this program. As a matter of fact, I've had Aquarion folks on the program before and individuals representing the preceding companies that have operated in your building and on your property. So let's talk a little bit about water and why it's important for the ideal audience that you're hoping to bring to this conference to get an orientation or a reorientation to why water is so important and what you're going to be talking about at the conference.
So, you know, water affects everybody in the entire state. It's used for health and consumption and cleansing, and as well as every industry and business in the state uses it in some way, shape, or form. So, it affects everybody every day of the year. In addition to that, there's a lot of changing going on. There's rules and regulations changing around water quality and its availability, on the choices of how we use water and how much water should be available for the environment versus how much should be available for drinking water. And so those conversations have an impact on everybody as well. And then in addition to that, you have the environmental impacts of climate change that are also coming into those conversations. So it's always been an important part of everyday life, but with all the different things that are kind of in the process of changing, those conversations need to continue to happen so we can all come to, a better understanding and agreement on what is the priorities that we should be placing on water use.
Well, certainly Connecticut, with its many rivers and streams, depended on water for a long time, centuries, as a matter of fact, to generate power. But today, maybe not so much. Are there still a lot of large and small industries in Connecticut that use water beyond the way a household would use it, as you said, for drinking or washing and bathing and stuff like that? Are there companies that really pump a lot of water through their systems to keep their businesses working?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's still an industrial sector in Connecticut. Now, Bridgeport, there's a couple of power plants that have come into the Bridgeport area, and they use a good amount of our water on their cooling, as well as a number of, there's still an industrial segment there that uses a good amount of our water on a daily basis.
And so what are some of the advancements that Aquarion has either helped promote or even been a part of over the past 5 or 10 years that have helped keep the sustainability of both the quantity and quality of water available not only to all our residents, but also these important businesses? What type of advancements or technology has come to the fore to help folks like Aquarion do their work better?
So, the rules and regulations around drinking water, what can be in the water and the contaminants that can be in water have gotten stricter and stricter over the years. So we've been applying higher and higher levels of treatment capabilities in order to provide that higher and higher quality water to our customers, and that's been consistent. Also going forward, I don't know if everybody's aware, there's some regulations that have been put in place called the stream flow regulations. They've been moved forward, and what they're going to do is require all water systems across the state that have reservoirs to release more water from our reservoirs in the future, approximately 10 years from now, in order to continue to improve the ecology of the streams downstream from our reservoirs. So that's going to have an impact on the available supply in the reservoirs. It has a fairly big impact on Aquarion, because in some cases we were pretty close to what we call our safe yield. Our available water was pretty much being used up on a pretty regular basis. So when you give away or you end up having to release more water, you have less water in your reservoirs. So what we're moving forward with now, and I'll be part of the conversation at the conference, is around water conservation. We've put a lot of time and energy and effort into a water conservation program. The biggest part of it just rolled out in the four towns of Greenwich, Stamford, New Canaan, and Darien this past year, where we had those towns. We implemented a two-day-a-week irrigation schedule down there, and it's around water conservation, really trying to find the most appropriate, keep the water for the most appropriate uses, mm-hmm. And try to find the right balance of the use of the water in those four towns. I think overall we did get some resistance to it, but overall I think it's been a success, and we will be rolling it out to other towns in Connecticut going forward.
Also, we had a drought emergency statewide that was recently rolled back taken down a notch, so to speak. But tell me a little bit about how companies like Aquarion have to react and communicate and be in touch with large water consumers and in effect support and help them through periods when there may be restrictions or at least a widespread shortage of the level of water that they might otherwise expect to access?
So, we pay close attention to the water supply. You know, that's what we do. That's what we manage. One thing is we did have a very significant drought last year, well below normal rainfall. But I don't know if most people realize that drought has continued into this year. We did have some better rainfall in late spring into the early summer between April, May, and June. But since July, we've been, again, July, August, September have all been well below normal rainfalls. So if you look at the year-to-date totals, we're still below rainfall again this year. And this is on the order of the third or fourth year in a row that we have been below normal rainfall. And there's some things I'll be talking about at the conference of showing that we're really amongst maybe one of the worst droughts in the last 100 years over this period. So that has become a big part of our everyday operation is keeping an eye on the water supply and where we are, what the demands are, and then and sending out those messages. We just did send a message out to our customers in Stamford, Grants, New Canaan, and Darien, that we hit what we call our first drought trigger, which is kind of like the first warning of, hey, you're getting close to, you're getting into an area where we're well below normal. It's not an emergency yet, but it's lower than normal, and you should start paying attention. So we did ask people to start turning off their irrigation systems for the winter, as well as to try to reduce their indoor usage by 10%. That is a big part of it. But I think the one thing that positive out of all these conversations is the water conservation we did implement this year in those four towns went a long way to really improving the water situation. We didn't end up having to put those types of restrictions in place until late October. If we hadn't had the conservation in place that we did this year, we probably would have been putting those restrictions in place much earlier in the year when they would have had a much bigger impact on a lot more people.
Very good. Folks, a little sample of what you'll hear in just one of the workshops that's going to be taking place at the Connecticut Sustainability Conference on November 17th, being presented by the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. My guest this morning, Jeff Ulrich, Director of Supply Operations at Aquarion Water Company, will be part of a panel with Michael Kramer and Peter DePasquale entitled Water Essential in Connecticut. That'll be the opening workshop of the conference. There'll also be one on waste and packaging, as well as Energy 3.0, New Trends and Opportunities. It's all part of the conference. We'll hear more about it when we get back with Eric Brown, Senior Counsel of CBIA. But in the meantime, Jeff Ulrich, thank you so much for your information and your participation in this upcoming conference. Appreciate you calling in. All right, interesting stuff from Jeff Ulrich of the Aquarion Water Company. He is going to be part of the upcoming CBIA Connecticut Sustainability Conference, and we're back with Eric Brown, Senior Counsel at CBIA. He'll be giving opening remarks at the conference. So, Eric, for folks that may have tuned in process, why don't you just let folks know the basic information that they'll need in order to get involved in this conference coming up in November?
Sure. Well, they can learn more about it, first of all, by going to our website at cbia.com. And also, if they want to register, they can do so there. They can call our registrar directly, Lise Cleish, at 860-244-1977. So it should be easy to sign up. And I want to stress again that this is very Connecticut-focused. All of these issue areas that we're going to be exploring, you've heard about water and the priority that is and the focus that's been both in the legislature and the regulatory arena. We're expecting legislation next year on packaging. I'm here at the Capitol as we speak, as the legislature looks to sweep many millions of dollars from the Energy Efficiency Fund and the Green Bank. So, we'll be getting everybody up to speed on what the lay of the land is as well as how specific companies, and they'll be hearing from specific companies on how they're adapting their business model to maximize the benefits that a company can get from investing in sustainability practices.
Excellent. So it sounds like a conference that is coming at just the right time for Connecticut businesses to take advantage of all this great information. Once again, on Friday, November 17th, beginning at 8:30 at the Pratt & Whitney Hangar Museum in East Hartford. You can register online by going to eventbrite.com or just web searching the Connecticut Sustainability Conference registration at eventbrite.com. And I want to thank Eric Brown for chatting with us from CBIA, as well as Jeff Ulrich of Aquarium Water Company, who will also be presenting at that event. Good luck, gentlemen. All right. Let it not be said that we venture far from our listening area to get good culture. And as a result of a relatively new theater company coming to Central Connecticut, we're going to get some. We're going to promote some. That's right. There's an upcoming production, a staged reading, I should say, of Catholic Schoolgirls coming up a little bit later in November. And we're excited to be able to help this brand new nonprofit 501c3 theater company get off the ground. We're on the line right now with Kelly Donovan, and she is a founder and actor in the Backyard Theater Ensemble. Kind of harkening back, Kelly, to the to that whole kind of childhood cliche about mom sewing the costumes and dad building the sets. But sounds like you guys got it going on pretty well, and you've drawn some pretty experienced thespians and crew participants to your circle. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Kaylee. What brought you into the world of theater?
Sure. So I grew up in Cheshire, Connecticut, and ultimately kind of headed back that way after college. And I had, you know, like many, I would call them theater kids, I had been involved in theater in high school, loved it very much, and then got to college and felt that it wasn't one of those things I wanted to pursue as a career. And it's a little difficult to participate in theater in certain colleges because a lot of those activities are reserved for theater majors.
Mm-hmm.
So after I graduated from college and came back to Cheshire, I got involved in some of the Cheshire Community Theater programs. And unfortunately, you know, I think many towns are feeling this lately. The budget just is tight these days, and so a lot of those programs had to be cut. And as a result, in 2011, at the time, friend and now my husband and I, we started the Backyard Theater Ensemble for kind of like-minded theater lovers who wanted to be involved in community theater, wanted to, you know, really pour their heart and soul into it, but didn't want to pursue it as a profession.
Mm.
So we started the company back in 2011 and have been, you know, bouncing around a little bit from Hamden and Waterbury all the way out to the Thomason Opera House. And now we've settled at the Whitneyville Cultural Commons in Hamden, you know, just kind of doing what we love here.
Mm-hmm. So as you were thinking through, and I have to say, having come up in the greater Waterbury area and been engaged in many, many productions back as far back as the early 70s and into the early mid 80s, actually late 80s, you came up in a good community. You came up in a real a theater-loving community that had really robust support for its Cheshire Community Theater. Is that organization now defunct or has been defunct since 2011, or are you sort of a spin-off organization that kind of you know, got your experience in that venue?
So we were actually part of what they called Comedy 101, which was a young adult community theater program. The Cheshire Community Theater Program still very much exists. They are still very much active.
That's good to hear.
But our target in terms of participants and our target audience is a little bit younger. We're really looking for those young adults, young professionals who have this absolute love of theater. They're not ready to give it up. They want to continue to pursue it, and they want to follow their passions. You know, we really try to do things that are a little bit edgy, are a little bit, you could call it risque. I think that's a little bit extreme. But we really target types of theater.
Ready for cable, not necessarily prime time, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Since 2011, tell us a little bit about how you have progressed and grown this organization. You said you've kind of moved around trying to find a good place to have successful productions. Tell us about a few of the projects that you've successfully mounted up to now.
Sure. So when we started in 2011, you know, it was kind of on a wing and a prayer. We got this group of people together. We didn't even have a name for the organization. We certainly were not a nonprofit. And we just found this script that we loved, and it was called Loose Ends by Michael Weller. And we were literally reading it in our parents' backyards. That's where we got our name. Rehearsing it, kind of playing with it just for fun. And probably about a month into it, we said, this is actually turning out to be something, you know, not just enjoyable for us, but something we really want to share with audiences. So we kind of called in the troops, every contact that we had, from old volunteers to new friends that knew anything about theater. We called in some friends that might help us fund the production, kind of with the caveat, and said, we hope we can pay you back with ticket sales at the end, but are you okay if we can't? And the kind of outpouring of love and support got us through that production quite successfully, and we found ourselves bombarded with the question of, you know, when's the next production? What are you guys doing next? And we all had such a great time with it that we decided to continue. So through the years, this is our 12th production. We found a home during our third production at the Thomason Opera House, and we spent quite a few years there, you know, developing an audience and developing a theater space, and just decided that it was time. We'd grown up in Cheshire, and we wanted to kind of relocate a little bit closer to Cheshire and tap into the audience base there, and recently found this connection with the Whitneyville Cultural Commons and just found like a really great fit there. We think that there's a great home for us in that particular community, so we're excited to share what we do with these new audiences.
So as you approach the idea of creating the backyard theater ensemble with then friend, now husband, did you, what's his name?
His name is Chet.
Chet. Did you and Chet and others sit down and say, we're going to start a theater group, and then eventually you saw that you could qualify for and get some benefit from being a nonprofit? Or did you say right off the bat, you know, we're going to jump through all the flaming hoops to just establish this as a nonprofit and then get to work on theater?
We really, you know, I wish I could say we were that conscious about it, saying from the start we were going to be a nonprofit, but you know, we were always nonprofit in mentality. We were always all volunteer. You know, the blood, sweat, and tears of our volunteers are what made our productions happen. And then probably in our second year or so, we said it was going to be worth the effort to go through to jump through all of those hoops to become a nonprofit. In an effort to support ourselves and in an effort to make, you know, patronizing the organization a little bit more attractive.
And as it almost has become second nature to me to describe the program we're on right now as the award-winning For the People, it's awesome to be award-winning, and you guys have enjoyed award-winning status, both from a technical standpoint and a direction standpoint, and not just here in the region, but all the way to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Let's talk about your awards.
Yeah, so we were part of the Connecticut and then New England regional festivals for community theater programs. We did a one-act play called Laundry and Bourbon, which we had started, which was one of our first productions. It was actually our second production that we performed at Post University. And we had the opportunity, based on our relationships with some other local theaters, the Warner and the Phoenix Stage Company, they kind of said, hey, you know, we think you guys would be great participants in this. And so we did the Connecticut State Festival and won, you know, the ability to advance to the New England Regional Festival. Like you said, we won some directorial awards and some technical awards for our set building. And then had the incredible experience of advancing to the New England Regional Festival, which was also held at the Warner Theater in Torrington, and got to see some really incredible talent from Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Our fellow Connecticut winners, the Warner, were the ones that won that regional festival and got to take their performance out to Grand Rapids, Michigan. But we had such an incredible time meeting all of these folks that were remarkably talented and sharing, you know, our vision, our company, in addition to our production, with these really talented other actors.
And as we sort of mentioned very early on in the interview, you indicated that you're hoping to continue to draw a wide range of folks that are too busy to be actors but still want to enjoy acting and performing. But based on these awards, you have really also drawn to the Backyard Theater Ensemble a great group of technicians and set builders and such.
Yeah, and I think really it just goes to show you that there's this whole mantra about becoming, you know, a professional actor and going to Hollywood or making it on Broadway and kind of the struggle that always goes with that. You know, we are all those types of people that, you know, we are talented. You know, I can't speak to how incredibly talented, you know, my fellow ensemble members are. They're truly amazing, and I believe wholeheartedly that if they wanted to, you know, make it big and be successful, they have all of the skills to do so. But that's, for a lot of people, that's a choice of a lifestyle and where you want to live and how you want to live, and we all kind of decided that that wasn't necessarily for us. So to have the opportunity to engage with people who are remarkably talented and intelligent in what they do and put together a production that has, you know, a very, very high quality, we really kind of pride ourselves on that, and that's a part of who we are, is doing these edgy productions and being very committed to a high-quality performance and a high-quality experience for ourselves and for our audiences.
Excellent. Folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Kaylee Donovan. She is a founder and actor in the Backyard Theater Ensemble, one of Connecticut's newest nonprofit theater groups, now taking residence in the Hamden area at the Greater New Haven area at the Whitneyville Cultural Commons. And speaking of edgy and fun shows, Casey Curdy's Catholic Schoolgirls will be their next effort. It's running November 17th, 18th, and 19th at the Whitneyville Cultural Commons. Fine, funny, loving, brilliant, rollicking comedy, carefree days of youth, all words to sum up this production, but we'll leave it to Kaylee Donovan to really fill you in and send out the invite. If folks are interested in getting to know more about this nonprofit theater organization, perhaps participate as an actor, a director, a technician, a scene designer, a costumer, they would love to have you. Kaylee, tell us about Catholic Schoolgirls.
Sure. Catholic Schoolgirls is a production that fell into our laps a few years ago. And much like our original production, it was something that four friends of four girls, you know, that I hang out with pretty regularly, we said, hey, let's just, you know, open a bottle of wine on a Saturday night and read this play and just have a little bit of fun with it. So, you know, flash forward a couple of years, we felt like this was the perfect time to actually make this show one of our main performances. So what's very, very cool about this show is that it's just four women, and they play four Catholic schoolgirls, four young girls from first grade all the way up until eighth grade, and they kind of graduate into high school. But these women and these actors also play four nuns that teach them. So as an actress, it's an incredible opportunity to play a huge range of characters and a huge range of emotions. And, you know, these women that I'm doing this production with are immensely talented. I mean, they sometimes have about 5 seconds to transition from a fourth grader to, you know, a 63-year-old Catholic school nun who's reprimanding these fellow fourth graders. So we've had a lot of fun with the project and have also gotten to really sink our teeth in to something meaty and challenging in terms of the characters that we play.
And almost exclusively transmitted through voice and the body language and facial acting of these four actors. I imagine no sets, perhaps limited costuming, if any, minimal, if no props. This is strictly making the story unfold and enjoyable through the most kind of basic tenets of theater.
Yeah, and a testament to the playwright that the way the play is written, you know, we felt it was appropriate to do a staged reading because the play is written in such a way that we don't feel like you're missing anything by not having all of those technical elements there. In fact, I think it strengthens the story and the characters by just being able to focus on the sort of humanity of the character that's sitting there in front of you.
Excellent. Kaylee Donovan, great to meet you, and very excited about this newest Connecticut nonprofit theater group. Kaylee is the founder and an actor with the Backyard Theater Ensemble, an award-winning volunteer nonprofit theater company composed of young professionals who dedicate their spare time to pursuing their love of performing arts as well as theater craft. They design, produce, and direct each production purely for the joy of entertaining and inspiring audiences. Catholic Schoolgirls is coming up at the Whitneyville Cultural Commons on November 17th and 18th at 8 p.m. and a 3 p.m. matinee on November 19th. If you'd like to attend, if you'd like to learn more about this group, maybe participate, you can go to Backyard Theater, that's with an E-R, backyardtheater.org, or email them and find out when their next audition is, or perhaps they could use your set building or costuming or makeup talent. Info@backyardtheater.org is their website. Kaylee, great to speak with you this morning, and best of luck with Catholic Schoolgirls and all of your future endeavors with the Backyard Theater Company. We'll hopefully be visiting with you or seeing you on stage again. Thanks. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.